Just say your name, man. Bishop? Cardinal?
Reverend Willie L. Calhoun. Vote Joe and vote no on all those amendments.
Thank you so much. Sometimes the ones who come late come with a big message. I'm going to let a community voice, a group, an organization that has muscle in the ninth ward, in the lower ninth and the upper ninth, and it has courage on issues, to come and present for you a very important topic that most of us have some connection with, knowingly or unknowingly. Beth, you want to?
Good evening. My name is Deborah Campbell. I'm the Upper Ninth Ward Chairperson for A Community Voice. Tonight we're here to discuss lead in the water in the city of New Orleans. This is an issue that my organization is working on with some experts that's here tonight. It probably affects every family in the room, whether you know it or not. I have an autistic son, so brain damage is a concern for me. You may even have a loved one that currently suffers from ill health through the effects of lead poisoning. But doctors never knew it, and certainly the infected person didn't. Our kids are not routinely tested for lead poisoning. This is something that we need to look into and ask our pediatricians to test these babies for lead poisoning. That is why we're here tonight, and thanks to Justice and Beyond for providing this venue meeting of spirits, minds, and justice each week for us all. Justice and Beyond has been a valuable ally for A Community Voice campaigns, as well as a place for us to come and ally with others, and we thank especially Christian Unity, Pat Bryant, for your commitment, contribution, and ongoing fight for justice. Just want to give you a little information about lead poisoning, and then we'll get to some questions and we'll turn it over to our guests. Lead poisoning can be found in our water. We're constantly testing. We're asking Sewage Water Board if they're testing. They're telling us yes, but the testing we've done in certain homes and in schools have found lead in the waters. This is something that can be rectified by nothing but a small $15 filter that can be placed on the faucet of the kitchen, and it will keep the school safe and it will keep our home safe. It's only a few minutes to attach it and it works wonders. We have to consider purchasing these for our homes, please, because it could save our children from these health issues that lead poisoning presents. All right. These are some of the things that have lead in them. We're looking at toys. We're looking at dust. People sand their homes, and these paint fragments has lead in them. Once they're sanded, they go into the air, and we can be affected by them. Mainly our children. They are the most vulnerable. Water. Bullets. If your game is shot by a hunter, the game is contaminated with lead. We in turn eat these animals and we become contaminated. So think about all of this. Some jewelry, the metal in some jewelry has lead in it. Bare soil, there's lead in your soil. And there is a test you can do to make sure that your yard is lead free. Peeling paint, of course, I told you about that. That has lead in it. Some ceramic mugs that we use every day to drink our coffee out of contains lead. Pottery, Mardi Gras beads. Be careful with your kids putting those Mardi Gras beads into their mouths. Those beads have lead. All right. Ways to reduce lead exposure. We're asking the people to buy toys that's made in the USA. Wash your hands often. Plant over bare soil. Leave shoes at the door because you can bring that into your home and contaminate your home. Eat and drink with glass dishes. Try to stay away from ceramics. Mop frequently. Use HEPA filters in your vacuum. All of this can safeguard your home against lead. Repair peeling paint using lead-safe work practices. Make sure that the workers are certified by the EPA. Install certified water filters for faucets in the kitchen. Cook with filtered water. Do not use tap water to cook, make coffee, or for drinks. Dispose of broken ceramic tile with gloves and HEPA mask. Avoid eating game shot with lead, that's your animals, and give pets only filtered water to drink. And don't let the kids play with those Mardi Gras beads.
So pets.
This is some of the safeguard for lead. As you know, lead can cause a number of illnesses. We're looking at autism. We're looking at Alzheimer's. We're looking at hearing disabilities. We're looking at learning problems. Aggressive behavior. You know, there should be some reason why our youngsters are so angry all the time. Why they are so ready to lash out at everyone. It could very well be the lead in the water. So that's something for you to think about. ADHD, that attention deficit disorder. Death is caused by a lot of lead contamination that we don't know about. Parkinson's, autism, Alzheimer's. Intellectual disability, it's like I said, violence, anemia. A lot of people are anemic and don't know why. Why their body can't absorb the iron. It's because of lead. Hypertension, brain damage, kidney failure, and I'm sure there's a lot of more illnesses that we're not aware of. But this is what's going on in the city of New Orleans. New Orleans also has the great luck to have two major experts on lead, the international expert of our own Dr. Howard Milky, and Adrian Katner. Dr. Katner is the daughter of a former Sugeon Water Board director, Harold Katner, who knew how to keep the pumps working, as well as key strategic alliance of a community voice. Trina Edwards, MPH, with
come.
The state she of Louisiana come. Health Department.
She couldn't come.
Oh, she's one of the ones that didn't show up. I didn't scratch her off. All right. Our organization has worked the years first as ACON to form an environmental roundtable here to work on lead issues. And together we made it illegal to dry sand our houses because Dr. Milky schooled us that this is one of the worst things that can happen to contaminate our very homes and environment. We continue to educate the low and moderate income community because our children are playing on unpainted front porches, yards with bare exposed soil, and drinking tap water. Our seniors are extra vulnerable, starting with the mid-50s on up. And lead will usually stay in the body, so we carry it until we start to come out and redamage, until it starts to come out and redamage in our brain. Our organization assists Dr. Melke and Dr. Katna in testing campaigns in our community that are challenged by lead poisoning. We have even assisted a rural community in Warren, Arkansas with lead poisoning programs so they can know and understand the issues there. If you want to join a community voice and fight lead poisoning, catch one of us after the meeting and we'll make some arrangements to have you campaign against lead poisoning. We also was able to get some of the schools to listen to our cry and test, and they did, and we're asking them to filter their water. It would only cost about $1,000 per school to put in a water filter, a simple water filter, to stop our children from having lead contamination. Dr. Melke, you want to speak first?
This is a winner of a new award.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
In what?
Tell us about it.
Oh, we just got a grant from the U.S. Housing and Urban Development, and we will be testing filters in the city of New Orleans and also in the city of St. Joseph, Louisiana. I don't know if this is on. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's not on?
Oh.
Hold it. Press it up. Push it up.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. First, I want to start off by saying a lot of people are very afraid about lead in water, and I want to say, first of all, that we do not have a situation like they had in Flint, Michigan. Certainly, the lead in our water is a much lower concentration. However, there are events or occurrences where I do see very high lead in the water. This can be a person who lives alone and doesn't use their water very much. It could be after there's been a long stagnation period, such as a long summer period when there has been no one in the building to use the water, for example, for schools. And also after one of these partial lead service line replacements that are going on throughout the city. I've seen very high lead levels after these replacements, up to 200 parts per billion. To put that into context for you, the EPA's action level, which is not health-based, is 15. So I'm seeing levels 200 and above after these line replacements. But this is not new. EPA has known for a long time about these spikes, the random spikes in lead in water after the line replacements. So part of my being here today is to help people who are in the vicinity of where there's a lot of plumbing work going on to tell you how you can reduce your exposure. If you're one of the lucky few who get these partial replacements done to your home, there's a way to take care of it. There are ways to flush, and I brought some directions today, and I put them on the table over there. And then, of course, there are these very cheap filters, NSF 53 certified, and I can give people some information about them, how to purchase them, and what to look for on the box when you're looking for these filters. And they are great, and they do wonders. I'm going to stop there and see if anyone has any questions.
Where do you put that filter at? On the kitchen sink?
You put it on your kitchen sink.
Pull it out of the box.
What is
it called? Show it to people.
This is one box, and we can pass it around. Maybe.
Open it out.
Open it.
Yeah.
Pure filter.
Yeah.
As long as it has NSF 53 and it says that it removes lead, then you're good. And I brought some materials that I put on the table over here on what to look for and how to find the correct filter. A lot of people use pitcher filters. A lot of those lost their certification. So you just have to beware. You want to get the ones that are mounted on your faucet. And pretty much you just remove the aerator and then screw it on. Yeah.
Okay,
too. I live alone, so do I need to just run the water in all of the faucets every morning?
So I recommend flushing. It does help to remove a lot of the particulates, and it is helpful. A lot of people are, the problem with flushing is I don't really see that it works for regular use. So what I'm seeing throughout the city is that the flushing for 30 seconds to 2 minutes or even longer, I don't see a lot of decrease. We have pretty steady levels of lead in the water, and the flushing doesn't help for that. Flushing helps when you have a serious sort of jarring of your pipes that can sort of release a lot of the scale and debris. It helps to wash that out.
And should we be concerned about lead in bottled water?
Bottled water, there have been a few tests of bottled water, and in general they're very low. You can find out information about the lead levels in your bottled water by going to NSF, the NSF website. You can also call the manufacturer, and they should have some information about their testing results.
Are there still areas of the city that are more at risk?
I would say right now, the areas that we should be concerned of with are the ones that are going through this ongoing plumbing, restoration of plumbing. Those are the ones that I'm the most concerned about. Water is the biggest source of lead for infants that are being fed formula that's reconstituted with tap water that hasn't been filtered. So that is the real vulnerable population that we're trying to address here. Yeah.
I've heard controversy on the sea that you drink. I presume that's the spring water versus the purified water. Is there really a health difference?
There are a lot of problems with bottled water. Bottled water is not very well regulated. So I could go on. This could be like a separate lecture.
Okay.
But in general, I would think that the best you can get, you know, tap water is pretty well regulated, much more so than bottled water. But if you filter it at your house, it'll probably be, in many cases, better quality. We don't test for every chemical in our tap water. And we certainly can't sit up here and say that we know it's absolutely safe. There's a lot of things that we just don't test for, we just don't monitor for. But I'm sure that we are doing the best we can. But filters. Yeah.
Do you have any application for showers? Because, skin is the biggest organ, so that's soap out of water. So do you have any application for water?
Now, lead is not a big problem with regards to showering. You're talking about volatile organic carbons that are going to be the biggest problem with the shower. But there are shower filters you can get at Home Depot or Lowe's or Walmart for those kind of contaminants. Again, what you want to do is go to the NSF National Sanitation Foundation website, and it's very easy. It's a very easy query system. You can put down what you're concerned about, and it sort of weeds through all of the different types of filters and shows you what you should be purchasing. Yeah.
Refrigerator filters. Are they efficient enough? Is that enough? Can you use those?
So again, with the refrigerator filters, you can find out what they're certified to remove by going on to the NSF website. This is an independent independent organization that certifies filters. Now, most of the filters are certified in the lab, so that's why we're doing this sort of field evaluation of some of the certified filters, just to make sure, because under abnormal conditions, such as like these partial line service replacements, where that you can knock out a lot of particulates, they may or may not work. That's what we're gonna be finding out. But
when you say partial line filter line replacement, are you talking about at the house, going into the home, or on the other side of the sewage and water board? On what side of the meter?
Right, so typically the lead service lines in New Orleans run from the main in the street all the way to the home. The city is only responsible for the part that goes from the main to the meter, or the property line. The homeowner is responsible for the part that goes from the meter into the home. So what these partials, when I'm saying partials, that is the part from the main in the street to the meter. And the homeowner is responsible for the part on their side.
But they're sending a lead into my side.
Hmm?
But they're the ones sending a lead into
my
side.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see.
Yeah.
What about the whips?
Mm-hmm.
What about the whip line from the meter towards the house?
Same thing. Whip.
That's what they're replacing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the whip. It's also called the whip. Mm-hmm.
But it's not on the between. This is between the meter and the house, and between the pipe that catches onto the house.
Mm-hmm. So, is there a filter that you can put in between the meter and the house to catch the lead before it gets into the house?
What you want to do is if you're having one of these replacements, that's what is going to be jarring the pipes, and that's what's going to be releasing some of the protective scale that then can get mobilized into your plumbing. You want to flush that line before it enters your house really, really well at high flow. Now, you want to be filtering the water at the point of use. So you want to be filtering it at the tap. And the reason I say that is because there's also lead in your plumbing. Brass faucet fixtures, pretty much all of us probably have some amount of lead in our brass faucet fixtures. There's also lead solder that can be in your home and other plumbing that has lead. So that's why you want to filter it at that kitchen tap. Yeah.
All the WIC clinics will offer lead testing, and then the agency that does the investigations after a child tests high is with the state.
But you have to request it. It's not a routine.
The testing children?
Yeah.
So state law says that kids need to be tested at age 12 and 24 months. That's the state law. It applies to every child in the state. Now, I'll tell you that, as you alluded to when you were talking, does that happen every single time? Probably not. So it's really important for parents when they go to the pediatrician visit to say, hey, just make sure if my kid getting his required lead test. Because we know just because it's written in the law doesn't mean that it always happens. Yeah.
Right.
Those test results, they get sent to the state. And if they're elevated, the state will investigate or do some type of action after that.
Yeah, they call it EPSDT, and part of the EPSDT screening is lead screening that every child should have. And so every pediatrician, you should, and they do measure your EPSDT rates to make sure that you have compliance. And as you said, a lot of times it falls to the cracks, but they should absolutely get it.
I know because the sewage and water board takes water, they test from the meter to the house, inside the house. They, you know, we sign for it, I sign, you know, like whoever wants to volunteer to offer their house, you know, where they test. So
the
they
city
test the water.
Sewer and water board testing is what you're talking about.
Yeah, they should, they're required to test it at the time.
Not from outside to our meter, from the meter, you know, the water that comes inside the house.
They should be testing at the tap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the requirement. That's the law.
But they do that regularly, I think, at least once.
It should be every 3 years, I think.
No, regularly, like every week, twice a week, something like that. They come and test the water. I know that because
they
They call you. You know, they come into the yard because you sign up. They ask, they send, you know, they
oh, send recently they've been offering free water testing with all of the...
For the city. It's mm-hmm. They don't do it for me. It's for the city.
Mm-hmm.
You offer your an accessible, yard water, and they come in and they test the water.
Is this when pipes are replaced?
No. They do it on a regular basis.
About
that. For the city.
Everybody?
I volunteer for the city, yes.
In what area do
you
live in?
It's a program, Sewage and Water Board
has
that you can sign up for.
Yes, right.
And they'll test the water, come out and test the water.
It's a volunteering.
I think they had a little incident about that where they were only certain employees for the water board was getting tested and all that.
Right. But it's for the city. I don't know anything.
It's a scandal, actually.
We're having hearing problems. So some of the people who are talking now, the dialogue has not been caught by other people in the room. So if we recognize you, we'll bring a mic over to you. And I recognize the young man with his hand up. It's a pretty big hand, too.
This is a suggestion. There are people in the room who are taxpayers here, and I'm hearing in the room that some people are volunteering and having their water tested, and some people don't know about it. Why is it not part of the whole generation of people who live in the city who have access to this, that everybody gets? No one is left behind because we're all taxpayers. The second issue is, when you're talking about young children who basically are supposed to be the custodians of tomorrow, why do we not have in the schools this particular test, make this mandatory that kids who are in the school system get this test, whether they like it or not?
Well, what happens is that children, particularly in homes, are exposed when they are young because they crawl on the floor, they have dust, they get their hands, and as a child gets older, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, they should wash their hands before they eat. And they should not crawl on the floor and put their fingers in their mouth for the most part. And so the exposure to lead and so forth from paint and environmental toxins is not as great because the kids are more cognizant of those type of things. So that's why the 12-month and the 24-month, those are the kids who are crawling around, who put their fingers in their mouth, the oral phase and that kind of stuff, and they have a high exposure. And so as they get older, the blood lead levels still can be there because there are toys, particularly now as Christmas time is coming along, there are toys that are high in lead. And so sometimes kids can inadvertently swallow these lead pillows, and they have lead is on many of the toys, and you really have to be cognizant about that. Maybe I can get you a list of that. I have a list in my files somewhere. I can pull it out. But anyway, the point is the rate of exposure to kids as they get older is less, and that's why they don't screen in first grade, second grade, third grade, because by that time, their levels should be pretty much normalized. Even though still maybe a little high, it's not high enough to treat or to intervene.
And that was Dr. Kevin U. Stevens, who is the co-moderator of Justice and Beyond. This is his first meeting to be a co-moderator. He was former health director for the city of New Orleans. Dr. Stevens.
I'm sorry, what's that website again?
NSF.org.
Dr. Milkey.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is a little bit like a good reunion because I see all sorts of people that I've worked with over the years. I started work in the city of New Orleans back in when I first moved here in 1988. By 1991, we were putting a map together for the city of New Orleans. So I've been mapping the city, and what I've been mapping is the amount of lead dust that has accumulated in the environment of the city. Now, over the years, we have learned a couple of things that are really important to justice and beyond. One thing we've learned is that there are very large differences across the city. In the outlying areas of the city, there tends to be very small amounts of lead dust that has accumulated in the soil. And in the interior of the city, there's a very large amount of lead, a very big difference between the two. The issue is that children are extremely sensitive to lead in their environment. Lead is invisible. It's invisible in the water. It's invisible in the air. And we didn't even know that, for example, lead was accumulating in the city during the time that it was accumulating, which was during the 19, especially from the 1950s up through 1995, when lead was taken out of gasoline, for example. There was a lot of lead. And that accumulated according to traffic flows across the city. So combined with the lead in paint, which was, if it was being sanded, then you would have a dust invisible, didn't see it, but children playing in those environments are picking it up on their hands, and the hand-to-mouth activity, especially for very young children. Living in a house in a very lead-contaminated community where there is track-in, for example, taking place, when shoes are taken off at the door, then tracking of this material into the interior environment. And also, for example, child care centers. We've worked on child care centers. Children were playing in a hazardous waste site during their, by any definition, during their recess at child care centers. And we've tried to do as much as we can to change those environments so that children do not get the exposure. Now, all of the efforts that I've put into, and one of the people that some of you have met in the past, Eric Powell, is still working with me, and we're re-looking at some of the places that we had brought in clean soil and put over the in yards through the city, through a HUD grant, and also at child care centers and some churches. And we're trying to re-look at the same areas to see how much change has taken place over the last 10 to 15 years since we started doing that project. The whole issue of lead dust proves to be very complicated. For example, one of the issues that I came upon was that gun smoke is essentially a puff of lead dust. And so anybody who's at shooting ranges regularly, and that would include the police force, private citizens, there are about 22 million citizens who are regularly shooting guns. If they are just shooting guns and getting a whiff of the gun smoke, they will, in a very short period of time, as an aerosol, go straight into the bloodstream after breathing. So, for example, in police or in the military, when they've been measuring the blood lead before they started practice and had just come to the new recruits, they discover that in a couple of days, their blood lead levels will double. And this is a tragedy for the people in security. And we have written about it, and there has been some attention on the topic in some places. Seattle had an excellent series of articles on gun smoke and the impact that just breathing the gun smoke will have on the people who are shooting. And there is an alternative, and we're not using that alternative. There is a lead-free bullet, a lead-free primer. It's used in Europe, but not in the U.S. So it's, you know, that's part of the complication. We have an invisible substance that is a very strong toxin, neurotoxin. It's there's different amounts in different parts of the city. Outlying areas of the city tend to be low in lead. The blood lead levels are low in those same areas. In the interior of the city, the tendency is for high lead in the environment, and the blood lead levels of the children are highest in that part of the city. I have a handout for everybody, and I'll leave it on the table. Basically, it shows pre-Katrina and post-Katrina. Now, the amazing thing is that Katrina changed the environment of the city of New Orleans. It did it as a result of bringing in clean soil from the coastal area, washing it into the city. The water on 80% of our properties apparently moved some of the lead down into the ground, but the surface is now much cleaner in the city than it used to be before Katrina. And we've been able to record that. It gives us some ideas of what could be done to improve our city. We can bring in clean soil from outside the city and change the quality of the environment for the parts of the city that really need some further work. So I hope that the what we've learned from Katrina is the with that experience is that decreased amounts of lead in the environment in general will change the exposure of the children living in those environments. And I hope that we also could work together to act on the experience we have in the city of New Orleans to make the city of New Orleans a lead-safe environment and a much lead-safer environment than we currently have. We still have problems. We still have the disparity between the outlying area of the city and the interior of the city. And we can change that if we put our minds to it and collaborate in new ways with various agencies to do something about it.
Excellent.
So those are the comments I have. Now I want to find out what your questions are, and let's work from that point. Yes?
I have a question. When I got to New Orleans, I wanted to plan some food item, and I was told not to do so because of the level of lead. I was told to send a sample to Tulane University in Baton Rouge.
Okay, that would...
LSU.
Tulane or LSU?
LSU.
LSU. Yeah, that's
and they sent me back something this thick, which was very detailed. And when I look at the level of lead, it does not help me know what is acceptable and what is not. So it kind of left me like, okay, there is lead. Because I know that some amount is acceptable, but some is not. So you kind of left to roll your food in buckets, and this is a little ridiculous. It's silly to have land and not be able to grow food on it.
I have been working with gardeners in the city of New Orleans. They're an amazing group of people because they understand the connection between the quality of the soil and the quality of the food that's grown on the soil. In general, what we're doing is putting gardens in that are raised gardens. Gardens are easy if they're raised. It doesn't have to be a large area that's raised. And with the raised garden, it's easy to put clean soil into it. And there are ample sources of clean soil in the city of New Orleans. It's just a matter of knowing about that. Tulane University has a program for the medical students that they're all learning to cook, and it's done at Liberty. What's it called? Liberty's Kitchen, and Liberty's Kitchen has gardens. I worked on those gardens to make sure that they're very low in lead, and so the produce that's coming out of those gardens also is very high quality.
So what's an acceptable level of lead in the soil?
Okay, the for gardening purposes, I don't think anybody should be gardening in the soil that contains more than 40 parts per million. It's a low number. EPA is saying 400, but that's long since recognized by research community. It's too much lead in terms of just what's on the surface of the soil. Most of the gardens that I've been looking at are around 20 parts per million soil, lead in soil. And there's other substances. If you have high lead, you also have high zinc in soil. They tend to go together. And zinc is a phytotoxin, so it wouldn't be a high quality soil. Phytotoxin meaning it kills plants. Well, that's against the idea of trying to grow a garden. You want your plants to be survive and live well. So there are a number of issues.
Yeah.
Here's your mic.
Have you done any study about the potassium rate? Who, because of the lead, how would the potassium rate for our children, the babies?
I'm sorry, I didn't
mortality
quite.
Mortality rate?
Oh, mortality.
Did you say mortality?
Yeah. Okay, good question. Excellent question. One of the ways that you understand the impact that lead has on the population of the city of New Orleans is look at the lifespan of individuals in the city living within the interior of the city compared to the outlying area of the city. Lifespan is a very good measure of many types of morbidity, in other words, sicknesses that have taken place. And what we see is that in the outlying areas of the city, the lifespan is somewhere on the order of 75 to 80 years. In the interior of the city, the lifespan is more like 50 years. And that's a fundamental difference between different environments. Now, there are a lot of reasons for the problems within the interior of the city. Lead exposure also means stress of various kinds. It means a whole series of health problems. So, and the stresses are related to the difficulties that people have in learning, the violence rates that are associated with lead. It ends up being a very complicated combination of problems. So that's one of the things that we need to figure out how to change so that the life expectancy is not so disparate in different parts of the city. Is there a microphone still around?
Right here.
Oh, okay, please.
Okay, my question is now we're aware of environmental racism. We have legal people working in that aspect and research people at the university level. When you say surrounding areas, do you mean the suburbs or across the lake? Because we also know that New Orleans, between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, is considered Cancer Alley. And that's the first question. The second question is, are we dating all the way back to the lead paint using these housing developments or former projects, as well as the multiplicity of wood frame housing in New Orleans that's, of course, being replaced as newcomers, razz old housing, and then rebuild. So that's also putting lead in the air. So
the experience is that even though there was haphazard kind of rebuilding taking place after Katrina, that the amount of lead in the environment underwent a reduction. Now, one of the things, of course, is 80% of the houses were flooded. Those flooded houses had to be cleaned out before you could go into them. So the combination of having a cleaner environment outside the house and a clean environment on the inside of the house probably contributed towards the improvement and the reduction of blood lead that took place. Our blood lead data is from the state, and I don't do that. We work on the environment, and the invisible lead in the environment. And the state works on blood lead, and then we put our two maps together to see how they relate to each other. And it turns out that over time, over and over again, we see the same relationship. High lead environments have high lead, the children have high lead levels. That can be changed, but one of the things about age of housing has been interesting to me. Some of the housing of the poor people didn't have lead-based paint on it because they didn't have the money to buy the lead paint. Was a high quality paint, and it was considered high quality. And so they were using whitewash and some other kinds of materials and not lead-based paint on them. And so that became a very interesting characteristic of some communities where you would expect to see high lead in the paint with wooden siding, but in fact it wasn't. And so it's very complicated. Okay. Other questions?
Can I ask you a question? Hi, Kevin. I am curious about water. As we had we're here with two bags of soil because we're trying to trace our lead exposure for our kid. He had one high test, and we tested our water with Dr. Edwards. So we found we had one part per million in the water. But what we were a couple of our parents who also had high lead tests with kids thought potentially by washing all the bottles and all of the breastfeeding parts and all these things that there's a film that's left over from the water that gets into the parts. And so we thought potentially that the lead exposure, because there was one test and then we solved the problem, but a lot of parents are having these conversations. And then my second question is, you guys are doing you're getting the blood test from the state, you all are doing the environmental assessments, but are you reaching to the pediatricians who are, when I interviewed my pediatrician, she said a third of her kids have these tests. And they're only required to tell you when it's only 5 parts per million, like in the blood test or the scrape. So those are my two questions.
It's optional for the pediatrician to report data.
Optional.
It's optional. It was written into the law, right? It's sort of, but it is, it basically, nobody's going to come over to the pediatrician and, arrest them because they're not reporting. I know that there's a problem that pediatricians have is that when they have a high lead report, it turns out that medically we don't have an intervention. And several times we've tested that the intervention that's being done has not been effective, so that means that nobody knows what to do. So one of the things that we've learned in the city of New Orleans is that there is something that you can do. You can change the environment, but it was done by a hurricane. We don't want more hurricanes to change our environment. We need to find ways to do it without that kind of damage and destruction, which is possible to do. You asked a question about water.
When you're washing your dishes, that's not the biggest worry. It's when you're actually ingesting it. Water is one of those only sources that, and food that we're, putting into our bodies. So that's what we're concerned about. Also with women. Let me just say, you can test your water today and it'll be 1 part per billion, and then you can test it tomorrow and it'll be 10 parts per billion or higher. It's very variable, and that's really hard to capture. That's why I keep saying filters. It doesn't matter what your, what your value was, just get filters. For women, you also want to be very careful about your lifetime exposure to lead, because it does accumulate in your body, and you can expose your fetus to it. And that's a very vulnerable time. So with regards to your child, it's so hard to be able to know unless you're really monitoring them and monitoring their environment, everything that they're exposed to.
Do you have a list of recommended filters, Candy?
Yeah, if you see me afterwards, I'll talk you through it.
Well,
Okay,
then Reverend Calhoun, and I believe I'm here.
So you said that there's lead in ceramics. Is it in all ceramics, or can we identify which ones do and don't have it?
The one in color.
You asked about ceramics?
Right.
Okay. The safest thing to do is buy a ceramic that has been tested by the state of California. And you know, one of the more discouraging things in about New Orleans is that Mardi Gras beads are not allowed to be sold in the state of California because they have too much lead in them. But it's okay here because we're not paying attention to that. And ceramics they're testing everything in California, essentially. And when I first came here, there was a big freeze took place about 1989, and all the pipes were on the outside of the house, and they were breaking. And I went to the hardware store and noticed that there were boxes of lead solder that had been removed from the market, and suddenly they had an outlet in the state of Louisiana to sell the lead solder so that they, you know, it was used here. But it was illegal virtually every other place, and it just wasn't being paid attention to. And it's those are the kinds of things that really discourage me. We know, we have a tremendous amount of information, but we're not acting on what we know. And that's discouraging, certainly, to any researcher, somebody who's trying to deal with.
Reverend Calhoun.
I'm trying to help my elderly people like Elise and Pat.
Yeah, and me.
Thank you very much.
Shouldn't we go to a doctor
to
find out how much lead is in our system? Is that a test that the doctors normally take, or is that something that we have to request? How do you know if you got a lead issue from your doctor?
The lead that we have in our bodies is mainly stored in our bones. And so you're not going to be drilling to get a bone, but it turns out we have a machine that you can measure. It's called an XRF. It's not used a lot, but it's available as a way of testing.
Should we be asking for this lead test?
Blood lead does change as you age. During menopause, during machopause, which is the male equivalent, there is some change in the bone, and then the lead will come back into the bloodstream, and then we start seeing a rise in the blood pressure, and that's related to lead exposure. It's very closely related.
So how often should we have that tested? How should we... Should be requested, or is it an automatic test?
It is not automatic. You'd have to ask for it. And I have had lead tests done. I work with high lead environments all the time, and I've tried very hard to stay out of it. Still, I don't get elevated lead, but I get, you know, I used to have elevated lead. Everybody had it. But now,
it's in the bone, right?
It's in the bones, yeah, it's stored. So,
and they're not going to test his bone, they're going to test his blood.
And blood is a very poor test for your body burden. So there are times when the lead will come back into the bloodstream. Stress does it. Any type of illness that's stressful. Very pregnancy and menopause, what else? I mean, it's aging. It's just aging. Lead will come back as a result of changes in your bone and the movement of lead from the bones back into the body. During pregnancy is particularly important. A person who's been highly exposed during, a woman who's been exposed during childhood can pass lead onto the fetus, and it's preferential for the because of calcium movement from the bones to the fetus. But if the person had lead exposure, then the lead in connected with the calcium will go back into the fetus. And that becomes a multi-generational problem. And we're concerned about it, enormously concerned. But we don't know what to do about it.
We've got two last.
Okay.
But I wanted to know, because you said earlier, lead started before Katrina, 1950 to 1985. And you said it happens, we receive it a lot through the food, and we carry on the kids and the adults. So I realized that in 1980 is when the year started, when a lot of kids was having ADHD. That lead had caused a lot of these
things. Absolutely. And autism, yes.
That's a very good connection.
It's a very good connection, yes. And well established.
The nutrition doctor was saying it's a generic thing, but according to what you're saying, not necessarily. Oh.
Well, there's a lot of variation. And in the same family, you can have one child that's lead poisoned and another one that has no problems whatsoever.
Because it took, the first kid got the hit.
That's possible. Yeah. When the lead from the bones, or when the calcium connected with the lead is released to the fetus is carrying the burden, and the woman's blood, the bone lead and blood lead actually go down. So the second child doesn't have the same problems the first child has.
We got one last question.
It gets complicated.
And this is from a person who got flooded out of Miami and is now residing with us. Welcome to New Orleans.
Welcome back to New Orleans. Katrina blew us away. Irma blew us back. So, unfortunately, due to the fact that there are so many catastrophic catastrophes happening back to back, particularly for that hit Florida, then Harvey right around the same time, there are no services for my daughter and I. We continuously call the Red Cross, and they just keep saying, call back, you know, but it's kind of puzzling when you go to the grocery store and they have paper signs saying donate for Hurricane Irma, but then when you're an actual victim, there is no services. Okay, there was only one bed and breakfast here, thank God, you know, and thank you to the 1870 Banana Republic bed and breakfast that did take my daughter and I in, but that's temporary housing until the 7th. So what are we going to do after the 7th? You understand? So I know there's a lot of agencies, and I teach music programs. I've been teaching from New Orleans Public Schools since 91, outside programs, and donated philanthropic color copy machines after Katrina, continued to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and teaching at Brown Mackey College. But now here, you know, it's just starting all over with literally nothing, and my own severe catastrophic. The awnings blew off into the middle of the street. It rained all through. So I have no home really per se to go back to. And I just want to know who's here, who can help, what can we do? Housing, anything, you know, food. We have to start over.
Pat, is there a question you can help with?
I'm sure there are people in the room. And I'm looking at some of them now who can help answer this question.
I'm not understanding that. No, people in Florida, they have the same benefits, the FEMA benefits,
if I was in Florida, I would have an abundance of services. But because you left, the lady clearly said to me, we did not think ahead for those that left. So what about the people that actually evacuated? Like there's if you go on to disasterassistance.gov right now, I can put it on my phone, there's like
Can we,
sister,
I'm going to ask a couple of people, hello, hello sister, I'm going to ask a couple of people to meet with you after this meeting,
yes sir,
and I'll be one of them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Milkey. Thank you, Dr. And thank you, Dr. Stevens. Didn't know you were going to come and be a presenter tonight. There you are. And thank you for coming.
Thank you.
For, you want to say something? Some final remark?
I'm just delighted that there's a group of people who are very interested in the topic. So I appreciate it.
And thanks to A Community Voice.
Yes.
I have gained a lot of knowledge tonight, and hope you have too. And Beth, what's the action plan? I mean, you didn't design. You guys didn't design this just to inform us. What do you want us to do?
Right. Hmm? I think the city should provide every home with a filter.
Reverend Calhoun says he believes the city of New Orleans should provide every home with a filter. Beth, what should we do?
I think Deborah said it. You can join with A.